T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Burning up the hotline today here on Sports Daily. If it's Wednesday at 10, that means Brian Haney joining us. Play-by-play voice of the Kansas Jayhawks as KU gets set to take on Texas and Kansas City in the Big 12 tournament. Brian, have you had a chance to decompress any from the end of the regular season until now?
You know, not really. It's kind of a grind that goes all the way through the end of the tournament. Then we go right into baseball mode. And so it's a good kind of busy. And I think we'll decompress and reflect more on 14 straight and the end of that and kind of what the next year of KU basketball looks like once the dust settles on this season. But when you lose the regular season, suddenly your focus really sharpens and narrows in on making the Big 12 tournament so much more important and making the NCAA tournament not more important than it normally would be. It's always of paramount importance, but you really start looking ahead to that final season. You know, non-con, regular season, and the third season is the most important one. It's the final exam that contributes the most to your end-of-year grade, and I think if anything, rather than decompressing, we've just kind of sharpened our focus even more to really get this postseason party rolling and hopefully have a great 3 days in Kansas City if we're able to make it that long.
And Brian, what's at stake for KU in this tournament? And we know they're in the NCAA tournament. That's fait accompli. But what's at stake in your estimation for this team, and how is Bill Self selling it?
I think it would be hard to climb all the way to a 2 seed, though not impossible, because you already are tied for the nation's lead in quadrant one wins through the regular season. And every game you play, if you played all 3 of them, would be additions to that quadrant one win category, furthering your case as having played the toughest schedule in the country and furthering your case to have a chance to stay in the Midwest, not necessarily as the Midwest region, but in the pod seating of Tulsa or Des Moines, which after the loss on Tuesday in Norman, you fall to a 4 seed and some wondered, are you going to get shipped to Hartford or are you going to go out to Salt Lake? You still have a chance to be a very solid 3 with all those resume bullet points I just gave you, Bruce. And that, to me, keeps you within driving distance for your fan base. I know there's some within this program that wouldn't mind going elsewhere just to kind of get away for a change and see what that might be like for this team. It's played really good on neutral courts this year away from home. But at the same time, you want to give your fans a chance to be there and be that 6th man. And so that's what's at stake. You know, Bill Self has realistically said that they're probably most likely in that 3 to 4 seed range, but outside chance you could play your way up to a 2, and certainly you could fall to a 5 if things don't go well and you're a lost team. So it's rare that, and I don't know if it's truly 3 seed lines that you could fall, but it's rare that there's at least 2 lines of fluctuation that could happen, maybe 3. And, you know, if that's the case, there's a lot to play for these next 72 hours, that's for sure.
Talking to Brian Haney, play-by-play voice of the Kansas Jayhawks. You can hear the Hawks here on KFH. Of course, you're home for KU Sports. They'll take on Texas tomorrow night. We'll be on the air at 7, tip at 8:30. Were you surprised at the – don't want to ruffle any feathers here, but I personally thought that the Big 12 player of the year may have gone to the wrong person, considering what he was expected to do after Udoka Azubuike got hurt. Dedrick Lawson did more than what was asked of him every single game all year long, it seemed like, after Doak got hurt. Was there any hard feelings there in the All Big 12 team announcements and the Player of the Year that went to Jarrett Culver?
There wasn't on Player of the Year, because Bill Self was preparing us for this for the last few weeks, saying in this particular year and in most years, he feels it should go to the best player on the team that wins it. And if multiple teams win it, then you look at stats. And so we had kind of prepared ourselves from a mindset standpoint that Dedrick probably wasn't going to get it, especially once Culver went for 31 in Ames in a title clinching performance on the final day of the year. But statistically, Lawson has no equal. I mean, 20 double-doubles, are you kidding me? A guy that averages 20 and 10, I mean, he was phenomenal. When he had a bad week or a string of three down games, he went for 14, 14, and 14 on three straight games. When Barry Brown had a bad week, he went 1 of 8 in Allen Fieldhouse and 2 of 10 versus Baylor in Manhattan. So Dietrich, as you pointed out, once Doak went out, had so much on his plate. And even on off days, still getting numbers, still contributing. I wonder if the lack of a defensive presence from Lawson, don't get me wrong, great on defensive glass, rebound efforts, right, but he's not an imposing shot blocker. He's not a guy that slides his feet particularly well with faster forwards that can drive around. And I wonder if that limited him a little bit. But obviously, we still feel he's the best overall player in the conference. He's not the best pro prospect, but he's the best player in terms of consistency, going out, getting his, putting the team on his back when he needs to, and doing those types of things. So I think that, you know, there was a huge shock there, Shane. The bigger disappointment, and this comes straight from the coach's mouth, not mine, but I agree with him wholeheartedly and was surprised when I saw it, not only on Sunday from the coaches, but then yesterday from the media, is that Devon Dotson is not a second-team All-League pick. The fact that Derek Culver of West Virginia makes the second team from the coaches, this will sound a little bit like sour grapes, but put him on another team in a different situation, and he's not getting those numbers. Devon Dotson just started a point guard at Kansas as a freshman. First guy to do so since Tyshawn Taylor, who had Sharon Collins as a wingman. Okay, Devon's wingman was Quentin Grimes. Big difference. And yet he looks so poised for so much of the year. He had a bad three-game stretch in the last 2 weeks that maybe swayed some voters. But the bottom line is he was easily your second most impactful player this year. And in some regards, when you look at what was asked of him, there were a lot of stretches where he was your best player. And to me, the fact that he was left on the third team by the coaches, and the AP doesn't vote on the third team, so he was just left out, that was stunning. And Bill Self took issue with that, and he even told the team in front of everybody on Monday, he asked Udoka Azubuike, he said, "Doak, do you think I care about these awards at all?" And Doak says, "No, coach, you don't." And he's like, "Well, you're right and you're wrong." He said, I don't want you guys to think that I care about these awards, because I don't want you to care too much about them. Mm-hmm. But when somebody gets snubbed, I do care for your sake. You guys get your just due. And Devon absolutely got snubbed. So, hey, it's no big deal. 6 months from now, you and I are going to be doing radio in October. And I'm going to tell you about how we're in Kansas City and Devon just got named first team preseason All Big 12. Right. And it will be a resounding, exciting thing amongst all fans of Jayhawk Nation. But for this season, he definitely got shorted. If anything, I think that'll fuel his fire a little bit because, hey, any team in the conference would take this guy in a heartbeat. And I think, you know, when you look at who the league is losing at the end of this year and who's coming back, I mean, he'll have a chance to be one of the Player of the Year candidates next year. That may sound like hyperbole, but I don't think it is. If you look at how good he was this year, and you know anything about his work ethic and what we expect him to do next season, I mean, he is a phenomenal, phenomenal talent.
If there's one thing, and there are many more than one thing, but if there's one thing that's intriguing from a player personnel standpoint headed into the postseason, it's got to be David McCormick, who has been pretty darned interesting here over the last month of the season, in the last two games in particular. And this is what you want. You want guys to step forward when they have opportunities. And this is an intriguing element and a different kind of piece of the puzzle that who knows how it's going to play out in the postseason for him. But I'll tell you one thing, I'm sure glad to have him as opposed to have him sitting on the bench and wondering what he's going to, what he can provide.
Completely agree. And there have been a lot of people making Silvio comparisons based on similar time of year when Silvio really took off. I know you guys remember last year, Udoka getting hurt right before the Big 12 tournament. And so DeSosa was pressed into duty, outplayed Sagaba Kanate, really keyed KU's run to a Big 12 tournament title. And if you look at KU's success in this event, it's just unreal. We'll go over it later, I'm sure. But he was a big cog in that. And maybe McCormick takes on a similar role within this tournament run. You're right, Bruce. He averaged 15 a game his last week of the regular season. He's now been starting for a month, and it's just so obvious how much things have slowed down for this young man and how comfortable he looks now, as opposed to a guy that would come in, be so sped up, he'd catch it, take one drop step, and then rifle it off the backboard. And if there wasn't glass there, it would hit somebody in the fourth row. Now it looks smooth. It looks in rhythm, and he looks confident, and his teammates are confident in him, and they're wanting to get the ball to him. So he's improved leaps and bounds. And I think, you know, who knows if we play all the way till Saturday night or not, but if we do, he'll have a big say in that. And obviously, as you look at the matchup with Texas tomorrow night, the last time we played them down there, we were still trying to go with four guards, one big. And with their length and size, they were trapping Kendrick on the catch on a double team every time. There was so much pressure on Lawson, so much pressure to hit shots on the outside. Now that you've got another big horse inside that you can throw it into, he can help clear the lane for Lawson at times. He can help you on the glass and get second chances. It just really increases your offensive potential, your rebound potential, all of that, when you go up against a team that's got an Ostakowski and a Jackson Hayes and guys like that. So I think KU's in much better position specific to this matchup, but also just overall with the emergence of David McCormick.
Isn't that a testament to the coaching staff and convincing, not McCormick in particular, but everybody, like, this is a long year and you never know what's going to happen and you never know when your number's going to come up. And you referenced to Sosa last year. He was an unknown quantity for most of the year. Then all of a sudden, boom, here he gets his opportunity. Same thing with McCormick. And I guess that would go for anybody on any roster at this time of the year. But, man, that's a testament to the coaching staff saying, hey, stay sharp. You never know when we're going to need you.
It really is. And the credit to the young man who I know was frustrated the first couple of months, thinking, wait a minute, I'm a McDonald's All-American. I didn't come here to ride the pine. Not that he was a top 10 overall Mickey D's type guy. He's a top 40 recruit. But all these guys have a little bit of ego and expectation. And I'm not saying he's an egotistical guy at all. He's one of the most well-spoken, nice young men, grateful, appreciative guys you could ever talk to. But everybody comes in with a certain amount of hope and aspiration and expectation. And it had to be frustrating those first couple of months. But honestly, he was getting good encouragement, not only from the coaches, but guys like Silvio, you know, to keep grinding every day in practice. You're going to get a chance. And as soon as Udoka got hurt, he had to know, okay, my time to shine is coming. And while, you know, it looked like Mitch Lightfoot for a while there, the greater overall ceiling, just based on his frame and what he can do with his game body-wise, he can be an imposer. You know, Mitch is a bit of an enforcer in blocking shots, drawing charges, protecting the rim, all that. But he's not an imposing physical presence that commands, you know, multiple guys trying to get between him and the basket. He's not going to, you know, be able to bully anybody around.
Well, McCormick's got, 40 pounds on him, Brian? I mean,
he does just about, yeah. That's down 60 from what it was a year ago. So he's always been a really big boy. And so I think it just opens up a lot of possibilities that Kansas didn't have initially when Udoka went out and David wasn't ready yet. Now that you've got him emerging, it's a very different looking team, and it's exciting to think what it could look like if he keeps ascending at this rate. Now, you only have as many as 9 games left, so he's not going to prove that much in 3 weeks. But, hey, if the last week of the regular season is any indication, and he can take some pressure off of Diedrich, and we can see more of Diedrich as a distributor in addition to being a finisher, because that's the big thing that Coach and I were talking about on Hawk Talk on Monday. We as Kansas fans should feel cheated that we didn't get to see the Diedrich to Doak, you know, front court that we talked so much about in October and November when Self was calling Lawson the greatest passer at any position he's ever coached. We thought we'd see that in the form of those two playing off of each other. And remember, Udoka a year ago had 120 dunks. We didn't see any of that this year. Doak only played 9 games. Well, maybe now we'll see a little bit more of that as you have to start to respect McCormick more, which frees up more room to roam for Diedrich and a chance for those two to set each other up. And hopefully we'll start to see some of that on Thursday night.
Brian, at what point do you start to get, and not defensive of the Big 12 in general, but where you start to think more in the broader terms of the league that you represent? There's a good chance that As we sit here today, that Texas Tech at a three might be the highest seed, and things can change, obviously, and we've already talked about that. Is this league not getting enough due in from the Lenardis and the Jerry Palms and the bracketologists out there? Because we know how hard it is night in and night out. There's a very real possibility that nobody from the Big 12 is in the top two lines, and that you might only have one in the top three lines.
Yeah, that's a definite fair question to ask. And I think part of it is K-State's resume, November and December, has not put them in a position to be where Tech is at in terms of seed line. They've been, you know, one of the top two teams in our league all year long. But from a resume standpoint and what they look at, on paper, you know, it's more of a four or five seed type team. And it'd be interesting to see if, you know, Dean Wade truly doesn't play the whole week and they don't have a long run, where do they wind up? And that's your league champ, yeah. You know. It's different than most years when the league champ is Kansas, who always seems to play a top 10 schedule, who always seems to be in the top five in RPI. And therefore, eight of the last 12 years has been a one seed. Bruce, nobody's saying that elsewhere. Not in Durham, not in Chapel Hill, not in Lexington. Nobody can say they've been a one seed 8 of 12 years. That's nuts. And so now that you don't have Kansas as king of the mountain this year, even though a lot of those resume bullet points I told you would indicate they'll be a high seed, since they're not on the one or the two line right now, it is different. It feels different, like a Big 12 isn't going to get a just due. The other thing that contributes to it is Iowa State, I thought, you know, might have a chance way back in January to be a three or a four seed caliber team, and they really bottomed out. Now I think they might be a surprise team in Kansas City, and I know Bill Self agrees, especially on the same side of the bracket as where you find K-State with an injured Dean Wade. Maybe they make some noise after all. But I think way back 2 months ago, you would have thought you had four teams that could all be, you know, top four seeds with maybe one as a two seed, a couple as threes, and it just hasn't panned out that way. So hopefully we'll still see a couple of three seeds come Sunday, maybe a four, a five, and a six, something like that. But you're right, you don't have the normal star power at the top, and who knows, maybe that'll benefit us because a lot of years we felt pretty good about our conference-wide seeding, and then you only get two teams to the second weekend. So maybe this will be a year where we surprise.
You and me both, Brian, bullish on Iowa State a while ago. I thought they were it, man. But you're right. They bottomed out, lost some games they shouldn't have at home, and basically underachieved. But as you mentioned at the very top of this interview, this is not only maybe a time to decompress, but get your laser focus back. It's not over yet. You still got a chance to get where you want to go in March. How does KU match up with Texas? What should we look for? A couple of things in that game tomorrow night.
Well, you're going to look for a desperate team. I mean, they're playing for their postseason lives, and depending on what you read, they may be playing for their coach's future. That's not me saying that. That's just, you know, the kind of buzz that's out there right now. And they're a 16-15 team that has enough quality wins to be in the NCAA tournament conversation. They beat North Carolina way back in the early season. But then again, they could be staring down the barrel at a 16th loss.
Yep.
So there's a lot on the line for this team. But they do have the best pro prospect in the league, Jackson Hayes. Coach Self has said that emphatically. And they certainly, getting Kerwin Roach back, are going to get a boost in the backcourt. I think Febres is a guy that can get hot and light it up. We saw him hit four threes versus KU down in Austin. You have to respect Tim Ramey. You have to respect that there's a lot of guys that I think are emerging on this roster that makes this a dangerous draw for Kansas. But as I said, KU's better equipped to handle them now than they were in the loss down in Austin, now that you have an emerging McCormick and you're playing three guards around two bigs. So I think that'll be a factor. But obviously, you know, this is a game that Kansas will probably be even more dialed in than they typically would. And that's not to say previous Kansas teams haven't come over here focused, but as Bill Self said, you can only get a ring three ways at Kansas: win the regular season, win the conference tournament title, or go to a Final Four. There's no participation ring for making the NCAA tournament
nope.
or the Sweet 16. And other schools give that. I saw that at Texas Tech when I was there, not at Kansas. So I think for these guys, Not that they care about jewelry that much, but this is a big deal, these next 3 days. I mean, it's bigger than it typically is. And then obviously the biggest objective is put yourself in the best position for seeding on Sunday. And so with all those dangling carrots, I think you'll see a really inspired effort out of Kansas. But you also have to keep in mind, is there a team more motivated, or should there be, rather? I mean, I don't know what's going on inside that locker room. But should there be a more motivated team than Texas when truly they are hanging by the skin of their teeth on the edge of that bubble for the tournament and people are talking about the future of their program and their coach and all that? I mean, I would think this is a really dialed-in effort on the UT side of things as well. So it's going to really be interesting to see who comes out locked in and hitting at a high clip efficiency-wise, because I think they're both going to want it so bad, which you don't always get in that Thursday session. But you certainly will tomorrow night.
From your powers of observation, not necessarily being an insider on this question, but I'll ask you anyway, Brian. I trust your experience. Shaka Smart at Texas. What has been the disconnect? I think all of us agree, and I don't want to put it words in anyone's mouth, that this guy can coach. I think he proved that at Virginia Commonwealth. Now, it's a different deal at Texas than it is at Virginia Commonwealth. But one would think with all of the things that you have at your disposal at a place like Texas, that you'd be better than a 20-win-a-year program. Well, he's been 4 years now and is, I think, I was looking at this the other day, I think he's one game over 500. What has been the difficulty in translation, do you think, for a guy like Shaka Smart at Texas?
Well, it's a great question, and you know, I can only wager a guess, but I think it's been a combination of things. I think that he's done a really good job of getting talent there, much like Rick Barnes mm-hmm. did. But in most cases, they've been one-and-done guys that ultimately, you know, don't stick around long enough to truly take you to the promised land. And Rick Barnes did more in short windows than I think Shaq has been able to do, and because obviously Barnes had a lot of one-and-dones as well. But Barnes had some two-and-done guys that at least stayed through their sophomore season. And, you know, we've not seen that as much with Shaka Smart. I think, you know, we've seen guys, and I'm trying to look back off the top of my head at the timetable here, if Miles Turner was the end of Rick Barnes or the beginning of Shaka Smart. But you had him, and you had Jarrett, who came through there, and guys that made profound impacts, obviously. You know, we saw Mo Bamba a year ago as one of the premier prospects. But again, you only get him for one season, yeah. And he's great, and he shows all the measurables and dripping with NBA draft potential. But when you could really turn that corner and be a dominant college player, he's already out the window. And then you add in the cancer diagnosis with another McDonald's All-American that's cost him two seasons in the backcourt. And you know, it's obviously been a perfect storm of some circumstances not quite clicking with recruits being all that they could be. On top of that, you know, they've had a couple of guys that have left the program or been suspended from the program in the last three seasons that have come at inopportune times. Everybody deals with that, though. That's not unique to Texas. I just think it's all kind of compounded. And he went from being a guy that at VCU took the overlooked players and made the most out of them as fourth and fifth year guys to now having to, you know, recruiting to a place like Texas, get five-star guys, but boy, you better squeeze every drop of blood out of that turnip in 1 year you got with them,
yeah.
Because they're going to be gone after that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So yeah. I think with Shaka, it just hasn't quite clicked as fast as he'd like it to. And, you know, this is another year with Jackson Hayes where he was ranked 80th as a recruit coming out of high school, but he's going to be a lottery pick now, and he's had a really good year, but what do they have to show for it unless they catch lightning in a bottle over the next 3 days in Kansas City? Whereas if you could get him to come back, which is not looking likely, you'd have arguably the preseason player of the year in the Big 12 next year. They've just not been able to have the timing work out like that. And some other schools have, and that makes the world of difference sometimes if you get one more year with that.
KU Texas tomorrow night at 7 right here on KFH. We'll be listening. Brian, thanks so much as always.
Hey, thanks, fellas, and thanks to my friends at the Mattress. Appreciate their sponsorship all season long, locally owned and operated by some of Wichita's finest. Check them out today. You get your tax refunds back. You can put it into a new mattress or bedroom accessories at themattresshub.com. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Brian.
Thanks, Brian.
All right, Chiefs chat. When we come back, Dan Israel will make make sense of the D4, Justin Houston, Tyrann Mathieu, all those comings and goings. How's the change to the 4-3 going to affect the malign defense from last year? Dan Israel checks in when we come back.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.